said, the three high-energy phosphate compounds besides ATP, two of them we'll see today, 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate and phosphoenolpyruvate. We will not see phosphocreatine, but that was the third compound, particularly important in muscle. We'll see 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate and phosphoenolpyruvate as intermediates in today's pathway. Today's pathway, again, is where we start the metabolic pathways is with glycolysis. As you can see at the top of the pathway, you see glucose going into the pathway. If you look further through the notes, a couple of pages back, you will also see that galactose and fructose also go into the glycolytic pathway. We will also see, when we get to the end here, that they all produce the same amount of energy from this particular pathway. No matter what it is in terms of sugar, glucose, galactose, and fructose, they produce the same amount of ATP. Again, we'll see that when we look at, first of all, the glucose pathway, then galactose and fructose. In this particular class, we don't need to worry about structures. However, in 452, we will revisit the chemistry. We're going to see a lot of enzymes. Something we've mentioned before regarding the enzymes, but we'll mention again, is we're going to see a lot of dehydrogenases, which are abbreviated DH. Abbreviations are fine on the quizzes and the exam as long as they're correct. If they're incorrect, then they won't be. If you want to use the acronyms, please do so. It's easier that way, but make sure you have them correct. That also goes for the intermediates. For instance, the very first intermediate in the pathway, glucose-6-phosphate, is G-6-P. That's fine. You can use that acronym if you wish, rather than writing things out. Dehydrogenases will always be linked to oxidation reduction. That means we're moving electrons. We're oxidizing and reducing things. We will always see NADHs or FADH2s involved in reactions with dehydrogenases. Also, kinases are going to be key in all the pathways. Anytime we see a kinase, we're going to be looking at substrate-level phosphorylation, which remember we said on Wednesday there was two types of phosphorylation, substrate-level and oxidative phosphorylation, which we'll see when we get to the last pathway, which is not classically a pathway, but called the electron transport chain. That's when we'll see how we get energy from NADH and FADH2. For glycolysis, the very first step and the first enzyme that's involved, and there's actually two enzymes, hexokinase and glucokinase, and that is basically the phosphorylation of glucose to glucose-6-phosphate. Again, it's a kinase, and we see our first substrate-level phosphorylation, and it's the phosphorylation of glucose to glucose-6-phosphate. The very first step in most of the pathways will be a phosphorylation involving a kinase. Your little notes there say basically it locks the intermediate into the pathway, locks it into the cell into this pathway. Often we will see phosphorylations of the very first step. You also notice this is an important step because it uses energy. The energy for that substrate-level phosphorylation of glucose is coming from ATP, which we now know is a high-energy phosphate compound. As you look at your notes under the first set of enzymes, hexokinase and glucokinase. The reason you see hexokinase written on most of the pathways is because it's the general enzyme, and it is very general. It is not specific. It catalyzes phosphorylation of pretty much all hexoses. It doesn't really care that this is specifically glucose. It will phosphorylate pretty much any hexose, and it's found in all cells that metabolize glucose. It's a very general enzyme. What that means about it is it has a very low Km, which means it has a very high affinity for substrate. Even when there's not much sugar around, not much glucose around, it will be active. Glucokinase is a very specific enzyme, so generally you don't see it written on the pathway, you see hexokinase instead. But glucokinase is specific to liver, to hepatocytes, and it also phosphorylates glucose to produce glucose 6-phosphate. Now notice glucokinase, though, has a very high Km, which means this enzyme, glucokinase, has a very low affinity for glucose, for its substrate. And what that does is that allows for a response to elevation in glucose from the diet. So glucokinase is specific to liver. And again, thinking back to the big picture, the three cell types that can respond to glucose without insulin being around, liver was one of them, brain, and then our simple red blood cells. So again, glucokinase is specific to hepatocytes, to liver. Again, so we've used an ATP, right, at the offset of the metabolic pathway, we've used some energy. Notice also that this step is irreversible. So notice the arrow points only in one direction. When we come back and talk about our reverse pathway, which is gluconeogenesis, or the synthesis going back up the pathway to make glucose, the places where we have an irreversible arrow are going to be important when we look at the reverse pathway, because they're not going to be a simple reversal. There's going to be a special enzyme, and we're going to talk about why these are special cases. So we want to notice, as you look all the way down the pathway, there's only basically three places that we have irreversible steps, and we'll point them out. Next step is reversible, phosphoglucose isomerase. Isomerase, again, name of the enzyme tells you what's going on. We're going from glucose 6-phosphate to fructose 6-phosphate. Nothing particularly interesting about this reaction. Doesn't use or produce energy. It's just isomerizing something, so it's just basically changing the shape, the structure of it. We still have 6 carbons, glucose 6-phosphate, to fructose 6-phosphate. That's reversible, so when we go back through gluconeogenesis, that will be a simple reaction. Now, fructose 6-phosphate going to fructose 1,6-bisphosphate. The first thing you notice there is, again, it's an irreversible step. We're going to come back and highlight that when we go back the other direction. Notice also it uses energy. So far both of the steps that have been irreversible use energy in the form of ATP. This is another substrate level phosphorylation. And the compound providing the phosphate and the energy is ATP. So fructose 6-phosphate becomes fructose 1,6-bisphosphate. So we now have 2 phosphate groups on fructose molecule. Enzyme there is an important one, phosphofructokinase 1. In your notes, notice the abbreviation if you want to use those acronyms, PFK1, irreversible step. This is an important step. This limits the speed, the rate of the entire pathway. So this is the major rate limiting, major regulated step in the pathway. And we'll talk a bit about regulation. However, we'll come back and highlight regulation of all of the carbohydrate pathways more next semester, but this is the major regulated step in the pathway. Phosphofructokinase 1 we're talking about, PFK1, the conversion of fructose 6-phosphate to fructose 1,6-bisphosphate. So that's the major rate limiting step. Next step, notice what we're going to do now is take a 6-carbon ring and we're going to basically split it in half. And the enzyme that does that, that cleaves that ring, is called aldolase. So it cleaves fructose 1,6-bisphosphate into 2 compounds, dihydroxyacetone phosphate and glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. That's all reversible. When we go back up the other way, we can take those 2 compounds and go right back to fructose 1,6-bisphosphate, no problem. So those are reversible. So now we've taken a 6-carbon sugar and split it into 2 3-carbon compounds. Again, dihydroxyacetone phosphate and glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. You'll notice in your pathway that we only go from one of those compounds on to the second half of the pathway. So dihydroxyacetone phosphate cannot go through the bottom half of the pathway. The only one we can take through is glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. So lucky for us, there is an enzyme that converts dihydroxyacetone phosphate into glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. And that is called triose phosphate isomerase. Again, the name tells you what's happening. We now have a triose, 3-carbon sugar, got a phosphate group on it. We are isomerizing it, meaning just changing it around. We're not adding carbons, taking away carbons. We're not oxidizing, reducing. Just a simple isomerization. So dihydroxyacetone phosphate becomes glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. So now, keep in mind as we head into what's called the bottom half, the second half of the pathway, we have two molecules of glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. So we took a 6-carbon glucose, we made isomerized that into fructose, still 6 carbons. We've got a couple phosphate groups on there, fructose 1,6-bisphosphate. We now have two 3-carbon trioses called glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate that are going to go now with us into what's called the second half of the pathway. The very first step in the second half of the pathway is an important one, and that's the conversion of glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate into 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate. And remember, 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate is a high-energy compound that we talked about. The enzyme there is a dehydrogenase, glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate dehydrogenase. So the minute we see that, we're thinking oxidation reduction. And we're also looking for an NADH or an FADH2. And as we look there, yes, indeed, we see an NADH. So as we go from glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate to 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate, we are converting NAD plus into NADH. It turns out, and you'll see these really long arrows now going down, way down to the bottom of the pathway, that NADH that's being formed in this reaction is actually the NADH that's used down at the bottom of the pathway for the conversion of pyruvate to lactate. And so this formation, this production of NADH is important for the enzyme lactate dehydrogenase that you see at the bottom converting pyruvate to lactate. And then that NAD, notice down there, that's regenerated comes back up. So we keep regenerating, moving around this NADH within the pathway. And that's important to kind of keep the pathway going. And energy then, from this reaction, is stored in 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate. You will notice that, or you may not notice, but notice that there is no, you don't see offhand right away the source of the phosphate group. So you can see in going from glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate to 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate, we're adding a phosphate group. But in fact, it is coming from the inorganic phosphate pool. And that's where the phosphate for that reaction comes from. There's pools of phosphate, lots and lots of phosphate all over the place that the body has access to. So the phosphate that's being added to the glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate is coming from the inorganic phosphate pool. Again, this is reversible. When we come back through for gluconeogenesis, it'll be a simple matter to move the other direction. Now, 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate, that's a high-energy phosphate compound. We know that. We know phosphocreatine. We know phosphoenopyruvate, along with ATP, are all high-energy. So notice as we convert 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate to 3-phosphoglycerate, we have a substrate-level phosphorylation. It is a kinase, which we expect because we have a substrate-level phosphorylation. And phosphoglycerate kinase is the enzyme that catalyzes the conversion of 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate to 3-phosphoglycerate. Notice this time what we are phosphorylating. We're phosphorylating an ADP to make the very first ATP that we see in this cycle, in this pathway. So the first ATP that we've made in glycolysis is coming in at this step. Keep in mind, and we'll talk about overall energy production at the end, that we're making two ATPs because we're doubling everything in the bottom half. Because remember, we turned all of our dihydroxyacetone phosphate into glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. So we're going through with two molecules all the way through the bottom half. So we're actually making two ATPs here. And again, where's the energy coming from? Where's the phosphate coming from? It's coming from 1,3-bisphosphoglycerate, which is a high-energy phosphate compound. Next step is a mutase again, fairly simple step, reversible. Basically, we're just moving a phosphate group from the 3 position to the 2 position. So 3-phosphoglycerate becomes 2-phosphoglycerate. The enzyme is phosphoglyceromutase, moving a phosphate group. 2-phosphoglycerate going to phosphoenopyruvate. The enzyme there is called enolase. And now we have, again, our third, not counting ATP, high-energy phosphate compound, which is phosphoenopyruvate, or PEP, Some of you know the acronym. PEP then donates that phosphate group and that energy that it's storing in the high-energy phosphate bond, and again phosphorylates another ADP as it's converted to pyruvate. Again, we expect to see a kinase there. In fact, we do. Another important enzyme, pyruvate kinase. Substrate-level phosphorylation of ADP to ATP, pyruvate kinase. Remember, again, it's doubled. It's doubled. We made two ATPs. Now, pyruvate can go two different directions. It can go in an anaerobic direction with the enzyme lactate dehydrogenase. We recognize that enzyme, LDH. We talked about it when we talked about isozymes. We talked about it in regards to myocardial infarction. We know it is an enzyme which catalyzes the same reaction, but is a distinctly different enzyme in a variety of tissues. It is the enzyme that converts pyruvate to lactate, and that would be anaerobic metabolism. Good example that you've all experienced of this is, again, muscle with high-intensity exercise. Particularly the large muscle groups go into an anaerobic state and produce lactic acid, hence that burn that you feel when you exercise beyond a certain point. Now, we're going to be more concerned with and more interested in what happens to pyruvate in an aerobic metabolism. What happens to the carbon is it becomes CO2, okay, which is not overly interesting. We respirate that out, take oxygen in, CO2 goes out. But what will be interesting is that the pyruvate, as we will see on Wednesday, is going to go through an enzyme complex called the pyruvate dehydrogenase, the PDH, to become acetyl-CoA, and then it's going to go into the TCA cycle. And why we care about that is because that's where we're really going to make energy. We make a little bit here, and we'll go over how much energy do we really gain, and it's not very much. If we go the anaerobic route, like in a red blood cell, pyruvate to lactate, remember, very simple creatures, we basically get, we net 2 ATP per glucose molecule. So how do we figure that? Go up to the top half of the glycolytic pathway, you'll see we used 2 ATPs. Bottom half, we made 4. Net means you subtract what you used from what you made, and we end up with 2 net. So not a lot, but a tiny bit of ATP. Really key, important for the red blood cell. If we go the aerobic way, and this is a bit complex if we look at the NADH as well, but if we go the aerobic way, we're also netting 2 just from the glycolytic pathway, because remember, it's still the same pathway going from glucose to pyruvate, so we still use 2 ATP at the top and made 4 at the bottom, so we still net 2. But you'll notice the NADH also becomes ATP. And it depends what pathway, what shuttle you take with the NADH. And we're going to get into that in some detail when we talk about the electron transport chain, which we'll do the very last Monday, December 1st of class. And if you go through what's called the alpha-glycerol phosphate shuttle, then you get a couple of ATPs from the NADH. If you go through the malate aspartate, you get 3. And we'll see how that can be and why you would get different amounts. But the key there is not so important the numbers, but to remember that the NADH does give us ATP, and we're going to see how that happens. Notice also then when we go the aerobic way, we're not regenerating the NAD+, because we're going the other direction towards the left-hand side and making CO2 ultimately. That's what happens to the carbon. And we won't care that much about that, but we're going to make a lot of energy. So again, the main number that you want to have in mind is anaerobic or aerobic. From the glycolytic pathway, classically from glucose to pyruvate, you get 2 ATPs. Don't worry about the NADH for now. Just note, as we've also said a couple times, we are going to get energy from NADH and also from FADH2. And we're going to talk more about that. So right now we're just going to keep tally of how many ATPs, how many NADHs, how many FADH2s we generate in all these pathways. And then in the end, we're going to put them all into the electron transport chain and see where we go. So that's classic glycolysis, pretty much what you learn as a glycolytic pathway. Glucose going to pyruvate with all these notes. And again, as you look through the enzymes, they're all listed separately. if there's any notes about them. Now, if you are limited on time or you want to do what the minimum is, you want to pay particular attention to PFK1, of course, because that's the regulated, highly regulated enzyme. You want to pay attention to all the enzymes where we make or use ATP. Because, you know, as we kept emphasizing, look, we're using energy, we're making energy. Those are important. So if you're really going to limit it, and you should know all of the substrates, products, and enzymes for the pathway. And if you ran out of time, those would be the key ones that you want to know, particularly if you're going to go on worried about MCAS and those kind of things. Or the energy production or use are always the keys. Now, fructose and galactose basically do the same thing as glucose. So no matter if you eat glucose or you eat fructose or you eat galactose, they're all basically going to come out in the same place. Now, the pathways differ a tiny bit, and we'll talk about particularly where they differ. So you notice if you have fructose and you want to go into this pathway, the first step is, again, phosphorylated, and the enzyme is fructokinase. And you notice we're using an ATP there, so fructose plus ATP becomes fructose 1-phosphate. Fructose 1-phosphate then is split in half by aldolase, and it gives us glyceraldehyde and dihydroxyacetone phosphate. Now, both of those compounds, again, have got to be converted to glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. The dihydroxyacetone phosphate can be isomerized simply to glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. But glyceraldehyde, notice the difference, glyceraldehyde and glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, needs to have a phosphate group put on it. So we need a kinase, so there is a kinase there. And we also need more energy in the form of ATP. We need a high-energy phosphate bond to donate the phosphate group and provide the energy. So you'll notice in going from fructose to glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, we use two ATP molecules. Now, what happens to the glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate is it enters the glycolytic pathway exactly as glucose did. So basically, it's the top half of the pathway that's different for fructose. A couple different steps, a couple different enzymes. Still uses the same amount of energy, two ATPs. The first one to phosphorylate the fructose, get fructose 1-phosphate, traps it in the pathway. The next one is in the conversion of glyceraldehyde to glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. That uses another ATP. So we've used two, and now we're going right into the pathway, just where we did before, glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, and we're going to go through all the exact same steps to get pyruvate. So in the bottom half of the pathway, we are still going to make four ATPs, because we've got two glyceraldehyde 3-phosphates here, and we use two at the top. So net, what we get out of fructose metabolism is still two ATPs. So we metabolize glucose, from glucose to pyruvate, we get two ATPs. We take fructose and go to pyruvate, we get two ATPs. So it's the same yield, same product, same energy yield. Galactose is the third sugar that goes through basically the same pathway. What are the differences here? Again, notice the very first step with galactose is again a phosphorylation, a kinase, galactokinase, fructokinase, hexokinase, glucokinase. All kinases using ATP to phosphorylate the very first compound in the pathway. We need an ATP. Again, what does it do? It donates the phosphate and the energy for this phosphorylation. What do we get out? We get galactose 1-phosphate. Galactose 1-phosphate. The conversion of galactose 1-phosphate to glucose 1-phosphate is an interesting one, and it uses a ribonucleotide in a biochemical reaction, which we hinted at when we started talking about the bases and ribose and phosphate. We talked about nucleosides and nucleotides, and we said there are several reactions where they actually are used biochemically. And so it turns out that a UDP galactose becomes a UDP glucose, and they keep going round and round in a circle there. And ultimately what you get out of it is glucose 1-phosphate, and the enzyme is called uridyl transferase. So we actually go through a kind of very complex structure. So there's our base, uracil diphosphate, with a galactose now on it that becomes uracil diphosphate with a glucose on it. And again, what we care most about ultimately is we get glucose 1-phosphate out of this. Now, glucose 1-phosphate is not familiar It's not an intermediate in the glycolytic pathway, so we know we can't go into the pathway with that. But instead, we need glucose-6-phosphate. That is familiar to us and is one of our key intermediates. So you remember that picture that I told you is particularly important that had the three key intermediates. Glucose-6-phosphate is a big one. Leads off to a lot of different pathways. So glucose-1-phosphate is fairly easily mutated into glucose-6-phosphate with phosphoglucomutase, and then it enters the pathway right up here at the very top as glucose-6-phosphate. So galactose, and again, is basically a stereoisomer of glucose. They're almost identical. Enters at the very top of the pathway as glucose-6-phosphate. Now what happens in terms of energy is, again, notice in this pathway we use one ATP at the very beginning to phosphorylate the galactose and trap it into the pathway. But it's entering at the very top of the pathway, so we're still going to use that second ATP up here at the top of the pathway as we go from fructose-6-phosphate to fructose-1,6-bisphosphate. So overall with galactose, we're still going to use two ATPs and make four. So we're still going to net two. So basically out of all of this, fructose, galactose, glucose, we still are netting two ATPs from the process, the pathway that we call glycolysis. So that's kind of the key to keep in mind. We net two, all three, basically the same thing. So we can metabolize them all really equally well. Fructose, glucose, galactose. Okay, the body doesn't care. We still get the same product, pyruvate. Now we're really going to get into the fun stuff as we move now from pyruvate to acetyl-CoA. Another key intermediate, glucose-6-phosphate, pyruvate, acetyl-CoA, key intermediates. So keep those in